Yesterday was a significant day because yesterday we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the landing and first walk on the moon. And so today I'm going to do something crazy. I'm going to try to pair that event up with the events that took place in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve way back when, and also to possibly try to connect it with our own personal journeys as we plod along on our spiritual paths. We're all familiar with the story of the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve and the apple and the snake. Adam and Eve were living in paradise. They didn't want for anything. And we learned from the scriptures that there were occasions in which God actually strolled with them through the garden and talked with them directly. And God provided for them their every need, except for maybe one. And as the story goes, the serpent comes along and speaks to Eve and tempts her. And he tells her that notwithstanding what God may have communicated, if you eat this forbidden fruit, you will not die. And not only will you not die, but if you eat this fruit, then your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And so we know what happens next, but I want to read this because I don't want to get the words jumbled. This is from chapter 3 in Genesis. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to the eyes and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its food and ate. So in modern day language, basically she said, okay, I'll bite. And then she handed the apple to her husband and he ate as well. And then something happened, something that generally is glossed over when we talk about this story. Because the words of the serpent actually came true. Because the very next passage that follows what I've been talking about here reads, then the eyes of both of them were opened. The eyes of both of them were open. And then they knew that they were naked. This is a very old story. This story has been taken literally for thousands of years. This story has been the basis upon which it was determined that everybody since that time came into the world born with original sin. This story has been the basis for all of the garbage and the junk that happens to us in life. This story has been pointed out as the basis for hunger and thirst and poverty, for wars, for killing, for hatred, for sickness, and even death. All because Adam and Eve did not resist the temptation. And perhaps the worst part of it all, it was this story that introduced the emotion of pain and the emotion of shamefulness to humanity. And insists that all of us at some point in our lives have to experience and feel that same emotion. But what if there's another take to this story? You see, I do believe that this story that was written almost 3,000 years ago was inspired. not inspired as it's traditionally taught in formal religion. This wasn't God opening somebody's head and pouring information into it so that it could be scribed out. But I do believe that the story was Spirit-led and Spirit-fed, because I think what inspired and motivated the authors in writing this story was an attempt on their part to make some sense out of their very existence, to come away with some kind of understanding that what it was that they were experiencing day after day in their lives. So looking at it from this point of view, one of the immediate takeaways from the story is the author's underlying awareness about humankind's divinity, made in the image and likeness of God. And another thing that we're going to learn from the story in just a bit is all about humanity's unlimited potential. Generally, the story of Adam and Eve and the eating of the apple is regarded as the fall. And boy, oh boy, do I take issue with this. I would argue that not only is this not a story about the fall of mankind, but it's a story about the rise of mankind. A fair amount of time, probably back in the 50s, the philosopher and psychoanalyst Erich Fromm wrote a book called Escape from Freedom. I know that a couple of you have read this book because you mentioned it to me. But in that book, Fromm asserts that the eating of the apple was the first act of human freedom. It was the first exercise of free will. And a lot of people would disagree with this. They would say, no, that's crazy. That's not what this was about at all. This was a case of your garden variety disobedience. But think about it. Isn't an act of freedom, isn't every act of freedom exactly that? An act of disobedience? We all know of stories about the rebellious teenager. And if you've had children, you probably have lived through this experience firsthand. I know that I experienced it with both of my daughters. They understood that there were rules, and they understood that there were consequences if those rules were broken. But at times, they concluded that it did not matter, because they had this deep-seated inner need to find out who they were so that they could be who they were instead of trying to be what we or anybody else thought that they were. And so there were days during their teenage years where they had this appreciation that it was appropriate, that it was worthwhile, that it was essential for them, at least on occasion, to color outside of the line. And I truly believe that had they not done this, there'd be a real sense in which they would be stuck, remaining dependent teenagers for the rest of their lives. This drive in humankind, this innate hunger and thirst to know more and be more, is the underlying force of humanity's ascension, of humanity's upward spiral. We all share this need to grow in awareness, to grow in consciousness, in order to satisfy another need on both a physical and a spiritual level, not just to have life, but to have it more abundantly. We need to go there. We need to climb that highest mountain. We need to take the bite of that apple, even if it means that we die. Because deep down inside, we also know, we understand, and we appreciate, and we realize that if we don't, we will die. Not just once, but day after day after day in our lives. You may be thinking that, but this was the Garden of Eden. This was paradise. They had everything that they wanted. And they disobeyed God for God's sake. And you know what? If you say that and you think it, you'd be exactly right. They disobeyed God for God's sake. They disobeyed God that was somewhere up in the heavens for the sake of the God that dwells within each and every one of us. Every act of human progress has been the result of moving or eliminating boundaries. Every newness ever experienced has been the result of answering the call to boldly go where man has never gone before. Every act of change, every act of growth, and I dare say every joy that we have ever experienced in our lives has been the result of laying claim that we are capable of something so much greater, so much more significant than what we have at any given moment. You know, I do believe in original sin. But I think what original sin really is any mindset that keeps us stuck because we can't believe that there is something more, that there is something better. Original sin is that fear that we have to open a new door, even though we're just aching to know what's behind it. You know, the comedian Emo Phillips tells a story about this that I really got to share with you. He says that when he was a little boy, there was a certain door in the house and his parents said, "Emo, under no circumstances are you ever to open that door and see what's on the other side." But then one day he said, "I noticed that the door was open just a little bit and I couldn't help myself and I opened the door and I saw things, strange things that I had never seen before. I saw things like grass and trees and flowers." Emo's parents obviously had been keeping him in the basement. As for the consequences of what I'm talking about, yep, no sense in mincing words. They're absolutely real. In the famous words of the prophet Tweety Bird, "If I do it, I get a whooping." It has to be this way. You can't possibly grow in awareness without doing the work. And you can't possibly escape the pain of letting go of some level of comfort. You can't possibly avoid the pain of not letting go of at least a piece of what you regard as paradise. But I also believe that when you are doing the labor, the heavy lifting, the work of discovering who and what you really are and trying to make that a reality in your life, that there cannot be anything that is more rewarding. Back when I was a young man myself, 17 years old, I worked summers for a leather company. And there were days that I would have to climb onto a semi-trailer and unload and lift 200 to 300 bundles of heavy leather. I'm not exaggerating. Some of them were 75 to 80 pounds. And on some days I had to do it when the weather was like it's been for the past 2 or 3 days around here, hot and humid. And when I was finished, I was soaked head to toe, dripping with my own sweat and perspiration. But you know what? I went home and I crashed. And I had this feeling of wonder, this feeling of power, this feeling of strength, this feeling of knowing that I had accomplished something that day. It far surpassed sitting around all day getting a suntan and drinking a lemonade. Paradise? Most people wouldn't think so. But I believe that paradise is that feeling of joy, that feeling of euphoria that you get when you do the hard work that you are called to do, when you do the hard work that needs to be done. Our greatness is our boldness. It's the human spirit that gave us the airplane. Not just that we dared to defy gravity, but that we dared to master it. And it's our human spirit that caused Europeans to sail in wooden boats across the vast oceans in order to get to the new land. And it's our human spirit in which we dared to leave the comfort of Mother Earth and risk our lives by climbing into a rocket ship and flying a couple hundred thousand miles to the moon. It's our human spirit that instilled with us that urge, not just to survive, but to really, really thrive. Still, according to that Genesis account, it sure sounds like God was being punitive. And I struggled with this passage trying to work on this talk. And maybe the writers lost sight of something, or maybe they were confused. Because in just a couple chapters before the one we're talking about, you know, the words were scribed, God made man and woman in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Well, if you're going to give men and women the DNA of God, how could you be surprised when all of a sudden they want to act godlike? Listen to the words after God banishes Adam and Eve. See, the man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil. This is a very difficult passage in many ways. First of all, God is speaking as an us instead of as an I or as a me. And so I think this shows us the mindset that the author had about the plurality of God. But also, it again affirms our divinity. Because there would have been no reason to banish Adam and Eve from the garden if there wasn't at least some feeling of being threatened that the author tries to write into the story, being threatened to God. And lastly, the story really is talking about a God that is separate and apart from us. And this too is a consciousness that would remain, that would persist literally for centuries. And there wasn't any challenge to this awareness, to this consciousness, until at long last our way shower Jesus appeared on the scene. And he says, no. You got it wrong. The kingdom of God is within you. The kingdom of heaven, paradise, is within you. And Jesus tells us that the Father is all about our health and our happiness and our growth and wants us not just to have life, but to have life more abundantly. So go ahead, have another bite of the apple. And he, in effect, thumbed his nose at the consciousness and the hierarchy of his day. Kind of like, how do you like them apples? It's really pretty remarkable when you think about it. 50 years ago, we traveled to the moon and we walked on the moon. And at the time that this occurred, this was celebrated not just by Americans, but by the world as humanity's greatest accomplishment. It's estimated that some 650 million people watched this live as it was happening. Did you ever stop and think the boundaries that had to be crossed, the changes that had to be made, the mindsets that had to undergo some significant rethinking in order for this all to take place? It's kind of remarkable, in one sense, that here we are 50 years later, and there's a sense in which it's old hat, that this is no longer any big deal. Maybe it wasn't any more important than when Columbus took sail and ended up in the Americas. But I think that the fact that it has become blasé to us to some extent indicates, again, the inner knowing that we have that whatever it is, wherever we are, something even greater, more incredible, more fantastic awaits each and every one of us. So the question is, what could it be? And how can we make it happen? Do we bring it about by finally letting go of our illusions as to what paradise is all about? Do we bring it about by letting go of our levels of comfort and stepping out of our comfort zone? Do we bring it about when we finally stop hating? Do we bring it about when we finally open our hearts and let the unconditional love that resides there just absolutely pour out? Who, what, where, when, how? A lot of questions. Very confused. Where's a good wise serpent when you need one? If you find one, please send him in my direction. Because I don't know about the rest of you, but I think when I hear his advice, I'll bite. We're going to take this to prayer and meditation, but you can see we're going to place this out on the desk in the fellowship area. Please avail yourself. They are fresh. They have been washed. And I promise you, the taste is absolutely divine.